Thank you. Now, last year, the tourists who came to South Africa during the World Cup spent about 3.6 billion rand in our country as a result of the World Cup, largely. The money has been, those who were skeptics about whether the World Cup was worth anything for us, we have at least 3.6 billion that was spent by the tourists. We, through our marketing efforts and brand activations, we believe that we reached over 1.8 billion consumers in the world through our marketing efforts. You'll see that with most of the statistics that are critical for SA Tourism and for this committee, we've exceeded quite a number of targets in terms of foreign tourist arrivals, in terms of air arrivals, as well as land arrivals. The numbers that Tim will probably show in the numbers. We've also increased the average spend per arrival, which is also a critical key performance indicator for ourselves. We have also, in this period, this last financial year was the 10th year of SA Tourism achieving at least on 10 consecutive years. We have not faltered in 10 years, and we have no intention of faltering going forward. We should look forward to number 11 and 12. Also, just very briefly, it's not in the report, but just to confirm with the committee that we have now appointed our CEO for the Convention Bureau. That should start on the 1st of November. Christina just had their lunch meeting with her to make sure that we can begin to move things along. As you also know, chairperson and members of the committee, we are in the process of looking for a chief executive officer. The board has done its work in terms of interviews and so on, and just presented a report to the minister. So that report is with the minister, and suffice to say that it will be up to him, after doing whatever consultation he needs to do, at the appropriate time to take the matter to cabinet if he's satisfied with the candidates that is being proposed. So in brief, overall, I think we've done well in 2010. We continue to, I think at best we could say that this new year after 2010 is showing that we're not slumping back. We're actually maintaining the levels pre-World Cup. In some areas, there is some improvement. We are concerned about the issue of domestic tourism. There's been a slight slump in domestic tourism, and what we're going to be doing in conjunction with the department is to strengthen the short left campaign to a point where we develop a holistic strategy for domestic tourism so that we can continue to increase the number of people who visit our sites in the country, South Africans who take holidays and so on. We have learned some lessons from Brazil. We're learning some lessons from Brazil about how to increase domestic tourism. And working together with the department, you will see in the next year and in the coming months, us trying to bring and roll out a domestic tourism strategy that should increase the number of people who take holidays. I think we're doing well in African countries, in Angola, and the SADC countries. The numbers are increasing there. Our presence in the BRIC countries is also getting greater focus. So Brazil is a new market that we're spending more time on. The Chinese are listening. I think they're beginning to come in good numbers. Same as India. We're seeing some good numbers coming from there. But in brief, those are my opening remarks, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Tim will take us through the presentation, and he also has a video to show chapter. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I want to spend more time in showing the video, Honourable Chair, and then around 30 minutes. So, because that showcases our work across the world. I think it's a good idea to show the committee the levels of work in different countries. Right? So I'm going to go through the presentation within the next few time, and then obviously make sure that I have enough time left to show the video, if that's okay.
Yeah, as long as it gives outcomes.
Let me start off by saying, as our annual report, you will know 2010 is the World Cup year. We're proud to report that we've achieved over 8 million tourists. Let me qualify again the notion of tourists versus arrivals. Tourists are ones that extend their stay by one night, more than one night, whilst arrivals across that comes in and out of South Africa, dangerous. So the number of 8 million tourists from 2009 to 2010, 2009 showed 7 million, and 2010, 8 million. So you can see, map of the world, a big growth was in Central and South America, which shows 109% up. The Middle East, 19%, Asian, 39%, and also the traditional market in Europe, was still showing a good number in terms of 8%.
Yeah.
If you compare, it's really what you're referring to, how we compare to the rest of the world, that just shows you, if you look at the world in terms of the average of 6.7%, how the various countries perform and how South Africa performs. And we're proud to say that 2010 was definitely a great year for us. What happened during the course of the year in terms of June? As we know, we just look at the year 2010, the ash clouds in April, and then there's a big surge in June, July. And the number was over 300,000 tourists that arrived in that period. So 2010, like I said, the World Cup definitely helped. Like I will demonstrate later the positivity around the World Cup and what it creates in terms of our brain, and that all looks, still looks positive. This shows you the tourist arrivals from the various markets. The Africa Air, that is still up 14%. Africa Land, up 12.8%. The long haul markets, 21%. And effectively all markets then, is the 15.1 compared to global arrivals, which is 7%. This is another demonstration about just how we're chopping this up in terms of the various territories, and we will see that the big numbers coming from Americas and Asia and Australasia. Right, how did we do in terms of comparing against targets? 2010, obviously when you look at our comparison between 2010 and 2011, you will definitely see that we also seem to be setting targets a year in advance. How are we comparing with that? So that's also looking good. Unfortunately, there is alarm bells going off right now. I didn't need to touch on that for the current year. And the market in Europe is showing a small decline. Right? But we are very confident about our Turkish market, that Africa market, that's helping us to still stay above our competitors, i.e. Australia and Brazil. Chair, this is a very important slide that I would like to just demonstrate, and that is, if you look at our markets, how we invest in core markets, investment markets, watchlist markets, and what is our closure rate? So when we create awareness, how many people actually come to the country? And you can see over the years, when you talk about our closure ratio, in our core markets is definitely improving. From 2009 was 2.85%, and 2010 was 2.73%. That's definitely, because the closer number comes back to one, the quicker you get your consumer to come out, your country to come out to South Africa. India, you can see, it's got the best closure ratio, currently sitting there 1.68. The market that we cut off a bit is Germany and the UK. And China, although it's a bit of a struggle, they have declined from 2009 to 2010 in terms of creating this brand awareness. Currently, 2009 was 2.44, they dropped in terms of ranking and it's taking a bit more effort to get them out there, although it's coming in big numbers. Positivity, this is our, when I talked about, well, once we create awareness, how positive are we, how soon are they going to visit, you can see that we're creating a good positivity out there. 79% people are talking very well about ourselves. But then you can see as we convert, the conversion comes down to 10%, for 2010. This is very much something that we're very mindful of, and I can just demonstrate to you something that happened post-World Cup and pre-World Cup. And you can see here a number of 79% awareness in 2009. In Feb, it went down to 78%. Look at what happened in August. That was just after the World Cup. We were high in terms of top of mind in our consumer's mind, and we were reaching 85%. But then it dropped down again to 79%. And you will know that there's some matters that happen in our country that sometimes impacts our positivity. But you can see, overall, the World Cup definitely created that brand awareness in terms of the country to visit. This shows you more about what it looks like in terms of the core markets. You can see that what happened February 2010, August 2010, and then November 2010. Although you can see the closure ratio in February 2010 was 2.8, we definitely improved as we improve. I just want to make sure the committee understands that the closure ratio for us is very important because it means that we, once our investment in that market is generating a bigger return, because they're quicker in making sure that they decide very quick to come to Africa, as opposed to a lot of investment and it's taking long to come. So this is a number that we definitely monitor. This is a very similar trend about our investment markets, and you can see that there is slight improvement. It's not exactly where we all want to be yet, but you can see a slight improvement in November 2010. Yet, let us demonstrate a picture in terms of what it looks like across the different markets. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail there, but it expresses the same percent as we go along the way. But it means if we go to a country like India, you will see that we've got a total awareness of 65%, and then people visiting is 21%. So we're capturing a greater percentage of our return investment in that market. So the higher that number is in terms of the likelihood to visit the next 6 months compared to the awareness, the better for us. This just shows gives you another picture in terms of when we create the brand awareness, it's about memorable, it's about nature and wildlife, it's about welcoming people, being adventurous, the different variety that we show, in the consumer's mind, are we breathtaking? So we measure this in the consumer's mind in terms of what do they see as at the end of the day in terms of value for money, safety and security. You can see, then we do the whole conversion just based on that as well. And you can see that value for money, we're still not there yet. We're actually improving, but not substantially. Safety and security is still an issue that we're working with. Chair, this is another angle in terms of the pre-World Cup and post-World Cup, so I'm not going to spend too much time on that. This shows you our competitiveness in terms of the various markets. They have to choose us against other countries. You can see how we look in terms of the ranking in terms of China, in terms of Australia. If it's one top of mind, we'll see where the stars are. That is when really we are, in the terms of the consumer in India, they really see us as adventurous. In Australia, they see us as naturally wildlife experience. In Kenya, likewise. But if you rank in 10, i.e. Kenya, unwelcoming people, you can see that they don't quite rank us too good. And you can see that at the bottom, which refers to the table stakes, value for money and safety security, there's a few things that we definitely score 10 out of 10, which is bottom of the ranking. Chair, this is just to give you a demonstration of, in the report we talk about our global awareness, our global reach. We talk about interaction with the different media, BBC. You can see we cut up our reach in the different markets, in the world, and you can see that we're actually covering a great part of the world. That's CNN, over 609 million. When it's really referred to, we're touching over 1.7, 1.8 billion people. This is how we unpack the people behind. That's Eurosport, and that's the different platforms. That's Fox, and that is National Geographic, right? News Corporation. And then totally, this is where that 1.7, 1.8 billion come from. So you can see, if we look at the globe, we are fairly, we're making sure that we are covering the globe in terms of creating awareness. That's our PR value that we're creating. You can see the investment later on. You can see all the return on investments there. That for each and every market, we're making sure that is a positive return on investment in terms of our PR value. Domestic tourism is a definite area that we feel that we need to do more. We can see that over the years, 2007 to 2010, that the annual trips is declining. The only real positive news out of domestic tourism is that our holiday percentage has gone up slightly. And this is part of the reason why we had to go back to the drawing board and to do a bit of a further analysis and research to say exactly what is causing us as a local populace that doesn't got the real drive to travel. And we've actually, part of our new campaign is taking to start saying how best we could create a culture of domestic tourism. Because if you do get this right, it makes sure that you can see there's a number at the bottom there, the total number of bed nights. Industry is talking about being in distress. If we can just get more NDSS to talk about moving our current domestic number of trips from 50 million to 54 million. And we see by moving it to 54 million that we can start helping make sure that we can assist the industry in making sure those bed nights are fully occupied. I'm not going to talk too much about this, Chair, because that's what we contained in the video. Right? But I want to just touch on the Gaming Council. This morning we talked about universal access and the grading criteria is definitely something that we started this year to make sure that we can benchmark ourselves on a global basis in terms of what does it mean to be recognizable and globally competitive in terms of our the experience that we show when a visitor comes here. So we developed these strategies in terms of introducing a new grading criteria, completely introduce a new IT system, we simplify the billing system. There's a lot of illegal use of the stars, so we definitely were going out into our markets to make sure that the stars that get allocated are legitimate. And then we also have worked on our competencies in terms of our assessments to make sure when they grade the establishments using the new grading criteria that we can make sure that we have a standard, a normative standard that is definitely world class. So what have we been doing for the 2010-2011? So we've consulted with the industry, we've implemented the new grading criteria in October 2010. Like earlier we talked about the universal criteria, that is part of the standard that we put in. So we definitely have looked at properties to make sure that we're now making sure that when they get in the stores, they get the stars based on the new system. The plaque has been redesigned in terms of the new Consumer Protection Act. And this is what you'll find these stars when you go to establishment. Hotel will have a certain star, bed and breakfast will have a certain star. So this is the kind of thing that we have taken out to introduce a new criteria. There's also been discussion about how do we roll out new fees, etc. Because as you know, the Grading Council is a business unit of SAT, and for us to really reach out to over 15,000 establishments, we need to make sure that we have the necessary personnel and resources down there. What has happened is that when we started assessing, if you go to the time when we introduced the grading in early 2002, we'll see that we have definitely stepped up the number of establishments that we've assessed. But with the introduction of the new grading criteria, you can see that we slipped in terms of the number of establishments that we managed to assess. And that is not, I think we also are now working towards rather let's rather make sure the quality is correct as opposed to just running after quantity. So we definitely are looking at our numbers differently in terms of what is possible in terms of ensuring that when we create a star, 5-star, 1-star, 2-star, etc., that we are consistent in that. Financial results, as Audit Chair said, we're very proud to have received a 10th consecutive clean audit. And you can see that the total revenue that we posted for the year ending March 2011 was 736 million. We got further income of 97 million, of which the grading, we can see that there's a grading income, there's some Toms and Levy income, this makes up 97 million. You can then look at our operating expenses, which we are very much containing in terms of making sure that in the 10% of which you can see marketing gets the bulk of the money, then employee costs, and then other operating costs. So in total, our total expenses was 855. And they had a small deficit of 31 million. So we really went out of our way to spend all our money. So I'm not going to go into a lot of details around the income statement and balance sheet. All to say that we've invested heavily in our IT systems to introduce a new financial Oracle, the Oracle system. And we capitalize most of those IT assets. Current liabilities is very much in line with prior years. Chair, this is the moment I would like to just play the video. It's okay for you. This is a global campaign that we've been running. We introduced it in 2010, and we believe that this can actually help us to grow the market in a different market that we're operating.
Welcome to our Global Creative Showcase 2011. 2010 saw phenomenal growth in tourism with 8 million tourists at 50% growth, surpassing international growth by 8%. We inspired the world with our hospitality and introduced the world to the Disco Dance and the now famous Vuvuzela. The joyous rhythm of our welcoming nation was enjoyed around the globe. A huge thank you to the entire industry for the service excellence and sky-high standards of hospitality offered to hundreds of thousands of guests. We are now focused on convincing international travelers to visit South Africa by creating the desire to experience our valued world-class destination and engage with our people and culture. Although we are currently engaged in attracting exciting emerging markets and building our very important domestic base, we will not lose sight of our top 5 international source markets. This presentation highlights our key achievements over the past 12 months and our creative work to differentiate and build our brand in 2011 and beyond.
Disco Dance exploded worldwide, enjoying instant success from New York to Tokyo, welcoming fans to an unforgettable experience and unifying emotions. Showcases South Africa as a breathtaking breakthrough destination. It's all about travelers experiencing incredible adventures in South Africa, with their responses and emotions all captured on camera. Currently, couples from China, Brazil, Germany, and Angola are featured, sharing thrilling adventures and inspiring fellow travelers in their own languages.
Thank you.
different to India, to Kenya. They do give a different thing. So when you into a marketing campaign, you will be to that specific market.
I'm not going to get this.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
page 9 of the annual report.
Thank you.
subsequently reweighted this section. What I do not have with me in physically now is the actual rewording. But in essence, and I call the Chief Financial Officer back in the office now, in essence, it removes this failure to comply with 51B of the PMMA. All it states is that we were not in compliance with all of the accounting standards in all material respects. In other words, the way that the accounting was done was such that because we had some problems with the Oracle system, they could not match all of the information coming out of Oracle with the information that was being presented by the Chief Financial Officer.
Oracle is the computer system. Okay.
We had some problems with the implementation of the new system. So what auditors would do is that they would pick up the information from the Oracle, but and it would not give them the full picture of what the finances were. And as a result, Oracle was giving incorrect, in some cases, incorrect things. Which the auditors picked up and queried with the Chief Financial Officer. And it was after those queries were raised by the Auditor General that those figures were corrected by ourselves. So in other words, you find a situation where the Auditor General says, my job is to find your books in complete order, completely aligned. If I find that your system continues to churn out numbers that are inaccurate, it is a misstatement of your financial statement. So basically what he was saying us to task for was a failure for our system to generate accurate numbers at all times throughout the year. And so the restated wording of that simply says that our accounts were not prepared in all material respects with regards to generally accepted accounting standards. It doesn't say that we violated Section 55.1B of the PFMA. And all that setup goes on to say that these material misstatements that were identified during the audit were subsequently corrected by ourselves and identified with that correction. So, in effect, we have complied fully with the law, we have complied fully with the accounting for the money that we have. All the auditor was concerned about is that in the process of getting there, there were some problems, there were some mistakes. But the final result is that we are all home and dry, and that's why they were able to issue us with a clean audit with no material
concerns.
Okay,
don't you think that it would have been better if, like the Indian offices problems, if it was just part of the chairman's report as well, chairperson's report, because it is not in the chairperson's report. If it was in the chairperson's report and explained, I think it would have been easier.
No, definitely that's correct. I think that we will probably, and it may be a question of sequencing of this meeting that we had at the
this happened before, or is it happening for the first time this year, 2010 or 2011?
Thank you, ma'am, for the question. All we had essentially was a computer system problem. Oracle was being implemented for the first time in this financial year. The computer system, the financial system of Oracle, was being implemented for the first time by Oracle to prepare their accounts and to report on their accounts. So there were implementation problems of that system. So it's the first time that this has occurred. And we've gotten to a point where we have now corrected that. The AG satisfied that should not be a problem going forward. And in fact, even during this financial year, we managed to catch up with whatever mistakes Oracle was producing. And we are satisfied that this should not be a problem going forward. So it's the first time, and hopefully the very last time.
As a community, we've got to deal with the information before and then we can ask questions to the officials. But the information that I've got in front of me is that the Auditor General said something on the 30th of July. I've got nothing else in writing by the Auditor General other than the explanation now given. And we've got to accept this report and it must be tabled in Parliament. I don't think we can just simply accept that the Auditor General just it's stated that he just changed it. And surely we need some form from the Auditor General, some form in writing to this committee to say that this was changed. Because this is the report that we've recently been given. And I would very much like to know when this meeting was being held. This was on the 30th of July that the Auditor General made this statement. And if it was subsequently changed, then surely it could have been included in this report that we now have to do.
Okay, let us do this. Let us regret for everything because the CA is pregnant and let us work with them. Let us have the letter and Jerry will have to circulate it to one member to make it easier. And then we'll make up our minds when we table the report. Perhaps if it is within a week, so that if members want to ask questions, then it's not too long. They can continue asking about that. But I think it was 10, and then it could be 11, and then 12 and 13. I think it could be necessary to go through all those sections. For instance, in accordance with the PAA and in terms of General Notice 1111 of 2010 issued in the Government Gazette of that number of 15th December, I considered internal control relevant to my audit, but not for the purpose of expressing an opinion on the effectiveness of the internal control. The matters below are limited to significant deficiencies that resulted in the findings on compliance with laws and regulations included in the report. I think that also deserves an account. The 12 deserves an account. What happened to that person who was supposed to lead because of the material oversight that shouldn't have been there in the first place. And then number 30, if you get what I mean. So,
yeah. Thanks, Chairperson. In respect of paragraph 11, what the Auditor General is saying there is that he looked at our internal controls, but not for the purpose of expressing an opinion in this report. So I guess what he was trying to say, he was taking a cursory look at our internal controls, but is not reporting on their effectiveness as such in this report. The deficiencies that he's reporting are the similar ones that we referred to, and that also ties up with what has been said under 12. That the oversight responsibility was if you have a problem like we had with Oracle, we then find that in fact the statements that were presented by the chief financial officer are not accurate and complete, because he as the auditor has found the mistake. What should normally happen is that the chief financial officer was presenting it a complete and accurate financial statement. And so as a result of that, he says that the problem with leadership, because we as the board and all the structures that are in SAP should have discovered these mistakes before he came to look at our books. So it is our leadership failure to have not picked up these mistakes before he could look at them. So he says, in other words, he had to do more than he would have as an AG to help us correct our statements. But the long and short of it is that, in respect of our internal controls, he then says, this shows that they were probably not correct. In respect of number 12, which is the oversight responsibility, that all of the structures, including the audit committee, should have picked these things up before he came on board. So he's setting a very high standard. He's not saying that once we had all of these conversations, it's fine, because the result give you a proper outcome. He's saying, I don't want to have to come here and bring my people and help you to find a way of correcting some whatever wrong the way in the presentation of your financial statement. And we agree with that view. As the audit committee, we have said to our staff and our people that the presentation of financial statements to the auditor general the next time around should not pick these kinds of mistakes, because they actually give an impression that we are not accounting properly for our money. But the reconciliations that were done were subsequently found that, in fact, no money has been lost and all the money is appropriated by the state government have been properly accounted for. So it's a message that says, make sure your house is in order first time round every time.
Yeah, in fact, I think my understanding seems to be a little different. You see, if you go to number 12, the reconciliations for significant control accounts were not followed up and reviewed. And then I underlined throughout here. So the internal audit meets, the audit committee meets, and then the requirement of the PFMA is that the audit committee meets at least 4 times a year, isn't it? So now if something like this happens throughout the year, so it means that there are gaps there. That is the second port of call. But the first port of call is the chief financial officer. Where is she? Their job to make sure that these things happen according to the PFMA and according to Treasury regulations. And the Treasury regulations are clear on this matter. And the PFMA is clear on this matter. And the board, there could be a lapse in the board, because the board only steps in either via the audit committee or the board as a whole. But the chief financial officer, together with the DG, should have been not the DG, the CEO, should have been clear on the account, you see, if really we're doing our job. Because there's normally in management there are routine meetings precisely to pick up these things with the same pattern. Could I get your explanation on that?
No, I'm very happy to do so. I think that we do admit and don't want to run away from the fact that there were these system problems. And I think all of the statements that you see that appear to be negative, all of them are related to that one issue. As to whether the audit committee could have picked this up a little earlier than we have, certainly, it is our job as the audit committee to have looked at what is being produced, but know, sometimes it's very difficult when you come to a meeting and the report that you get seems to be okay until somebody else looks with a different eye and they come and say, but this number doesn't tally with a different number. So the Oracle system, I think, is the one thing that really that nothing else that has gone wrong. The Auditor General, the Audit Committee meets regularly, fortnightly. I've been a member of that committee and just took over as chairman about a month ago. Perhaps we should have looked with better eyes. But when we picked this up in the final financial statement that was produced, we immediately took action to make sure that the Chief Financial Officer and the staff do prepare those corrections. Those corrections were indeed made, and all I can say that bar that misfortune or mishap of having to correct those things as we're going along, the committee can be satisfied that in the end nothing untoward happens with the finances of the organization, and that the Auditor General subsequently also himself as a body found that in fact these statements were not against the law, they were simply system problems that should have been picked up a little earlier by all concerned. They were subsequently picked up and appropriately corrected. So we're not running away from that. It is something that was a possible failure in oversight for the time of the financial year. And as I say, that if going forward, we are confident that the system is performing as it should, the people who are working with the system are familiar with it, and nothing of the sort should be there. The board has endorsed the view of the audit committee in respect of the measures that we have now put in place to make sure that this does not occur.
Yeah, I think this is a requirement of bodies that there should be an alternative system of vetting. If Oracle does not work, there should be an alternative, and it is a requirement, it's not a choice. What do you say to this?
Honorable Chair, I think the Oracle system that we see what has happened, we had a version just below what we introduced. So we got used to this, that the system around Oracle would automatically produce these reconciliations. So it's an automated financial ERP system. So we were getting used to the fact that the old Oracle system was very, very stable. So once we implemented the next version, the better version, because the reason why we had to go a higher version was because of dealing with our country offices, which deals with different currencies. So this was a better version for us to handle all these things. So throughout the year, we were obviously relying on, and I take your point, yes, Chair, I take your point, if the automated system is not working, we need to revert back to the manual system. But as we were working through the issues, we felt comfortable that we're now getting the better of this. It was only right at the end of the year that we got this final hiccup. And I take your point about manual reverting back to manual reconciliation.
I think it is still remains unacceptable. I mean, let us just go back and try and have few things to or perhaps working methods in order to try and prevent these things. And it's no use continuing to say it is not a lapse, it's a lapse, but if it is still out of the air, it's no longer.
just to say that I think if they come out with a statement, because I think that's something that's normally the important general or tough on. But I've got a document that's been linked to both the department and SAT on last week, Thursday. This is the document that they will present to the portfolio committees on all government departments and entities. So I'm a bit in an awkward position saying, because this is something that they've discussed. In this one, I've got the slide with me where the proof is that the Auditor General, this is their report, stating that all corrections as part of the statements have been done by SAT. So it's 100% is there. Although they give us a yellow colour and say this is an area that we need to work on, exactly like the chair of the Audit Committee said, this is something we will take forward. Because once we receive the interim audit statement, those issues will pick up. The problem is that the Audit General has picked it up instead of it should have been done in-house. And therefore, the approach is that we need to make sure that our internal audit systems is upgraded so that those things can pick up. It's quite difficult, and I think we can revert to the CFO from the department. Sometimes you will have it like in misstatements around leaks, because in our case, we had it in the previous year, that leave taken but not being put onto your register is a risk for the department because it's money not paid out, and you need to have systems in place. So if we look at what the Auditor General will be telling, and this is a document that we signed off with, it will reflect that from an SAT perspective, those corrective measures have been done before the Auditor State, but they still have to note that. That's the requirement of the Auditor General to Parliament to say, this is a problem area that I identified. It's not a red face as they identified in some of the departments you will see as it is going through. I mean, from this report, there's only three departments that have got clear financial, unauthorized financial statements with no findings. And I think that this is the report that we talked to the tourism portfolio. So I just want to sort of confirm that there is a document underneath that meeting on the 18th, where the AG will present. Ideally, we should have had the Auditor General people here as well today, so that they can sort of confirm those
messages.
I
don't dispute
what
you're saying, except to say that you see with these matters, the 31st of March, you end the game. The 31st of June, you submit to the Auditor General.
Mm.
The end of August, the process goes on until the end of August, 6 months after. And then after that 6 months, then we're finalized. So there is that management letter from which these things should have arrived. That management letter sorts out things that the Auditor General misunderstands. And then after sorting it out, then so I don't think that your sign, but I think it's better to try and go and improve. Let us try and improve the area for improvement. And then try and train some of the difficulties of saying.
as a record for a sentence forever. But I think you are in the station, you know. Yeah, to make the report to the system. And this seems as if there is an opportunity from what you are saying, where, for instance, SAT could have been aware, you know, of this. In which case, it should have been between them and the Auditor General's office before it comes into place as it does now. But that's why I was asking earlier on whether there has ever been a problem like this before with SAT, because I don't think I've ever experienced any negativity in the report of the SAT. But what the Auditor General is saying here, it shows that something is not going right. Why was it not corrected before? Particularly when you say, as far as accounting for the money that has been used is concerned, there is no proof that this report is not agreed completely.
Yeah, in fact, I think we are grateful for the way the board and the leadership is accounting. They realize that they are accountable whether they or not. And there has been a turbulence, and the primary accounting officer is not here. So we do understand. What we appreciate is that you take responsibility as a chairperson, whether you were there or not. Doesn't matter. I think that principle stands. I'm not saying that it's not formal or CEO or whatever. So we are grateful for that. I mean, when we are leaders, we want to accept our responsibility. We understand it in that sense. But next year, we expect better performance. And I don't know whether there are any questions, but there was a relocation. And then this migration from DEAT to Torres. So you had assets as joint assets at DEAT, and then how did you migrate in terms of the assets? Aren't any assets lost in the process? Have we accounted properly about the rules and so forth? I'm aware that it is not yet in the audit. It's a concern on the what is it called? When you dispose a lot of in the process of migration.
Chair, I can respond to that. In the case of SAT, it was not an issue. SAT as an entity always operates as an entity, so they manage the assets as an entity. And when the new department or tourism has been established as a separate portfolio, the main changes happen between DEET and the tourism department. The entity as itself has just come over as, by the proclamation signed by the President, so reporting now directly to the Minister. So the assets are fine, and I think also in the report you pick it up that around assets there was no findings from the Auditor General. So they've done those issues. They've also visited some of the country offices. And that is the report that also comes into the audit committee. So as far as assets concerned, it was not an issue where assets was incorporated into another entity and then split.
Are there any other questions? Mr. Farai.
Thank you very much. production. I said, who is this person who has been promising these people that establish your house as a DMV and get people coming to finally extension and say what happened. I just wanted to know who from these people, maybe the people from the Kadmi did that, not sure. I wanted to check this board, the board itself of the craving council, and I'm happy with the board, and I'm sure they want to assist us a lot when we go and get some accommodation. But my concern is last time when you do the oversight, we slept in one of the hotels, and I presume it was in the best hotel. When I get into that hotel, it was very important, very beautiful. And I was convinced that particular hotel has been created by them. Unfortunately, when we heard the presentation from the member from your department, she made us aware that even that hotel that she slept as a member for parliament is not created. I wanted to understand how can the department, the entity assistant, so that he must not get lost, because I feel that it is unfair to me. We are here and emphasize that we must support the created establishment. And we went to that particular. I was even interested in that. Thank you, sir.
Last question before we have tea, and then we shall be having a briefing on the biannual report, and then if we want to have other questions, we will have them after the briefing on the biannual report. But the mama would first, and then let's go for tea. Then just note your questions, and then after that, we will answer the questions.
Mine is just a comment. Am I allowed to?
As long as it is short, it is one sentence. No, one sentence. Five sentences in French.
Well, in fact, I'm saying thank you very much for the presentation from South African topic. You know, as I was listening to them, telling us about the experiences of the industry during the year 2010, of which we are witnesses, we were there, more especially when you were a soccer lover, you know, you enjoyed it the most. And it was so good for the industry because at the time, the world was in their pockets, of course, Jefferson. Things were moving. And I want to thank them for this video because I wanted to ask them, how do you entice a man when it comes to domestic tourism for him or her just to know that if I get to Mpumalanga, I'll come across this and that. KZN, Western Cape. But now the video did show all that, you know. Chairperson, tell us if you have a
compliment. That's a compliment. Thank you very much. Let us pray for 10 minutes. Then after we have a
Thank you. Greater establishments.
But this whole new criteria is really separating the men from the boys, if I have to use that. But because we clearly have identified a target that we want, because in terms of our database, we're looking at about close to 20,000 establishments that we would like to create. And we currently, on a year-to-year basis, in order to catch up with that, we're setting ourselves a steep target. And like we started last year, we only managed to create 5,900. This year, we set a target of 9,000, and we clearly are running behind us. So we have to really start looking at, are we too overambitious in terms of achieving this target, or are we, in terms of the whole grading committee, they're also giving us a guideline in terms of rather go and make sure that our quality is guaranteed and start looking at the target a bit differently and rather set target that is achievable. Because by the sounds of it, we may not achieve the full 15,000 or 20,000 that we want to get graded, because there's a few of these establishments that are really, I mean, the recession is also not helping. That is not cancelling their grading. Some of them are now, because of the worldwide trend, that they have a thing called AA. So they've now established another kind of a criteria. But I think what the big issue here is that this whole grading is not regulated. So it's all voluntary. So this is part of the problem that we're sitting with, Jay, that we need to start looking at what are we doing to make sure that we can firstly get the right numbers, make sure that we can separate, and make sure that we can support and give benefit to graded establishments, and what do we do with those ones that is, I call it, illegal, because they create their own clock and their own stocks. And we need to start really looking at this differently. And the New Tourism Act is really starting to address that. So I'm looking forward to see how best can we deal with this matter. Because it is a challenge that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. I mean, just to give you an idea, on a month-to-month basis, we sit down with people that bring their establishments up for grading, either renewals or new ones. And we currently have a huge rejection rate because certain things are not according to the new criteria. So I think this I just want to remind the committee, this is a challenge that we are very aware of, and we're dealing with it. And we also need to look at how best we design our targets for these statutes. From a financial point of view, I'm not going to go to all the details in terms of assets and liabilities, but I would like to go to comparing our financial results from March to August. Up to August, post the year end, we have received revenue of 347 million. What we're now doing with the department, we do instead of getting a fixed tranche every quarter, we're now getting we need to submit a cash forecast. So it's all based on actuals and how we plan to spend our money. So this is something that we've introduced recently, because what has been found is that sometimes we have over more cash than what we need. So now we're requesting what we really need. And you will see that as we go through the income and the expenditure, that we're currently sitting with a deficit of 40 million, of which we now managed to put a necessary request through to get that fund. If you go through the spend, so you can see analysis, actual versus expenditure by country, you will see that there are certain countries that are lagging behind in terms of spend. This is 5 months, just recognized, but the one that we are focusing on and been asking questions and following up is the likes of Italy and India. But they are valid reasons for this, because in different markets, different cycles happen in terms of signing joint marketing agreements, doing certain campaigns, activations, etc. So, and from an India point of view, I know that we've now signed a big contract in terms of making sure that the media spend is going to happen, etc. So we'll definitely, I'm not concerned that we're lagging behind, because we definitely are on track in terms of spending our money. From a business unit point of view, likewise, the only one that we balance of that money will be reallocated to other projects as we identify it. Right, from OVA's point of view, we are still very much in our normal spend targets in terms of the compare approved budget for 2011-2012, where we had 840 million expense capex of an overage of 207 million, amounts available for marketing of 632. At a percentage level, we're still remaining on the same level, 41%. In terms of actual spend today, so we haven't. There's no alarm bell going off yet, Chair, for us not to spend the money. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. So these are two questions, and then you spend 41%. Yeah.
Two, 5 minutes.
Current year compared to year-to-date spend for the 5 months.
And then the last column is saying as a percentage of the approved budget, that's where they are. So we have to, if let's assume we're halfway, we should be close to 50%. So the only area that we're running below is the office of the CEO. And like I said to you, there's a few planning expenditure, i.e. overheads and some other marketing things that because of the departure of the CEO, we will fast track as and when the new CEO is appointed.
Thank you.
for 2011, there was absolutely no losses whatsoever. How does that come about? Looking at your gains there, your gains are only 7 million. But you have no losses whatsoever.
This is a quite a, because we got offices internationally, right? What we then do to make sure that we balance the risk in terms of, do we give them any cash, funds for their work to do? We give it in their local currency, right? So, but the issue in terms of when we budget for these amounts, we budget at a certain exchange rate. But when the exchange rate, like in the recent past, the rand gets very strong, got very strong. So at that budget rate of 8.35, and then actually converting the real cash when they get it at 6.7, there's a gain for us. So we then, from an accounting point of view, we need to record that gain, forex gain. The year prior to that, when it actually went the opposite. That's when we started incurring losses because we set it at 8.15 and the rand jumped to 9 or 10. That's when we started getting to currency losses. But we need to record it as a gain. Overall, the net balance will be either gain or a complete loss. But this, the past year was definitely to our advantage from the expenditure point of view. Not from tourist arrival point of view, but from the expenditure point of view. Because our dollar went to the third. Right? So when you buy a campaign for $100, right? We used in our case, if the rand is getting stronger, then you almost say 6 rand to the dollar. We only give them 600,000 as opposed to your original plan 850,000. So that benefit is recorded as a gain. I hope I answered that problem. It depends on how the rand is going in terms of when you do the transaction.
And then what about the other
question? I'm going to ask my chair this side to start the introduction and I will put it on the side for the rest of the rest.
The grading process. The new grading process started about just over a year ago, 18 months or so ago. I guess largely because we recognized that there were problems with the way that the system was run at that point. We got to a point where we asked the grading council of Headland to make it to at some stage something to know the capability of planning submission. So quite familiar with the issues of grading and so on. There were roadshows that were made to the establishments to say we're going to start a new process of grading, which could be a little more rigorous than what has happened up to that point, because we've got lots of complaints from people to say somebody is saying they are running a 5-star, in fact, the service is a 4 or 3-star. We also got to a point where we found that the process that we used to assess the establishment was also had some flaws in it. Our assessors were not as rigorous as we expected them to be in some cases, actually probably committed mistakes themselves, which you know the quality of the grading in question. So this process of a rigorous grading criteria, rigorous grading system, of making sure that our assessors are brought up to speed and they can give us proper assessment started about 18 months ago. Now you can imagine that if you are going to apply a much more rigorous and higher standard, those who are not complying with that standard are going to begin to fall off. A lot of them are going to complain. A lot of them are going to contest and challenge the new grading that we give. And so this is what is happening. That we are in this process of trying to get everybody to agree that the new standard that we are being applied. standards, and that they must try and as best as possible to comply with those standards. This being a voluntary process means that those who fail to arrive at the standards that are being required are either falling off, because they're no longer required to be graded, or are putting up challenges to them. Now, in respect of the small and medium enterprises that you're concerned about, they also must comply with the requirements. So if you run a BNB, you will have criteria that are set up for what is a proper BNB, and you need to comply with those requirements. So we showed your plugin, I think, in one of the videos where it says bread and breakfast, one star. If that is the star that you want, you meet the criteria and you will be graded. And after that, government departments and other users will use you on the basis of that grading that you got. So it is in the interest of even small establishments and SMEs to comply and to sign up to these criteria. They are not impossible criteria, because all they're doing is to say, if you want to set yourself up as meeting a particular standard, please meet that standard, and not say you're meeting the standard when in fact you are not. Comply with the standards and the criteria, so that when you get that plaque, it gives an assurance to any member of the public, whether they are from government or from overseas or from anywhere, that what they see on that plaque is what they will get when they get into your room, when they take up your application. Now, this being a process, it takes some time, and I think the downturn in the economy has helped very much, because those who were hoping to get the fat from the economy, we now have a lean cup. And so for people to go and buy a new bed, buy a new sheet, have cutlery that needs a certain standard, have ventilation that needs a certain standard, are now finding a little more challenging because there are not enough people taking up the bed. But the grading system must remain true to those, you know, it cannot be affected by those conditions, because you say you're meeting a certain standard, you need to meet that standard and continue to provide that quality assurance to people that if they come to your establishment, if you sell your sister, you are in the sister and not something else. So that is the process. I don't know if Tim would like to add.
I think this is a process that we feel that we can overcome through collective engagement. I'm going to just quote an example that I'm doing at SA Tourism, because we really need to either bring people here on what we call fan trips to get familiar with it, actually, we bring out here. We mean put them in certain hotels. The question that we're now asking the people, when you book a hotel, they ask, are you graded? And are you paying Tom's levies? And guess what? You'll find that on a 50-50 basis, they're either graded, they're not paying Tom's, or they're paying Tom's, they're not graded. But the word gets out very quickly. Once you start engaging them, they say, okay, it doesn't mean that I need to do this thing, and what does it mean, and how? And I think that's part of education. And I think what I have now started with the Tourism Grading, the Tourism Business Council, is to start going on this campaign that we need to start telling them the benefits of being graded and the benefits of being a Thompson Levy collector. Because once you start making that Thompson Levy collections possible, you assist us in terms of a company like last year they contributed about $100 million there in Thompson Levy. This is that 1% that we get. Now imagine if we do a full on analysis on that, and I've done it now recently, we can up that closer to 250, maybe 300 million if everybody participates. But what we want to do now is to make sure that we give the establishment the benefit. And part of the benefits that we're giving them is to make sure that when they get listed on the website, they get some sort of preference. Right? So yeah, there's a whole education process that we're getting through that. But I think from a government perspective, we encourage a similar process. Once they, before you make a booking to host your conference or whatever, or a hotel, I think we need to go through a similar process to make sure that we get people to understand why they should be graded and paying the tax rate.
So,
Sir,
so
DNBs and other pollution at this point in time, there's something that worries me most as a member of parliament, because you are here because you were requested by your community or constituency to come and represent them in parliament. They always come to you to try and ask certain things. How can I go about when I want this? And I must say that, one day I did ask this question, but I was cut short by a senior member of the department. I was cut short in that, if you want to put up a BNB, you just go to the bank. That's it. Mm-hmm. I was not happy. Because I never expected that. Because we have this, the DDI, which funds the people who are trying to put up, get small business. And what I was asking now, whom do you approach if, maybe I'm failing to put it now, how do you go about if you want to put up a BNB? Where do you start? I remember on Sunday, I was in a meeting, one of the ladies came to me, Mom called, Nifuna Ubuzi BNB. And in Janati, okay, Mom Brashan will smile. Because I didn't know what to say. So now, this is the time. How do you go? Whom do you approach? And, you know, maybe the department can just help. Because really and truly, we're trying to push, more especially the women, to put up BNB. You know, because they in fact, we are just after getting employment for the rest of our poor people. Thank you.
Thank you. I think that perhaps it's to say that part of the Tourism Enterprises Program has been set up to sort of support small and medium businesses. So they have a program that deals with those issues. So I think those things can come to our department. We will make sure that we channel that into the Tourism Enterprises Program, of which the department are contributing. But we're not talking a lot of money. It's about 20 million that we're contributing towards that program. But at the same time, business trusts, which are now winding down, are also contributing. So there's an agreement with that entity. But perhaps if I can just mention that Cabinet has made the decision some time ago, I think it was in the latter part of last year, where tourism was part of the IPAP program of DGI. And the decision was taken that tourism is standalone, so we need to sort of manage tourism ourselves. So in our presentation, you would have seen that the policy unit of the DTI, who are dealing with tourism, is transferring to the Department of Tourism with effect of the 1st of November. So that is the policy part was dealing with that. We've also had discussions with them around the incentive program. Exactly what the member was mentioning is that DTI was running an incentive program for tourism as well. They've been committed for almost 18 months in advance already, and we are in discussions now with DTI, because that function needs to revert to the Department of Tourism as well, so that we can start driving tourism enterprises and dealing with those issues. So the problem that you've raised is something that the minister has put into the cabinet process. Cabinet has made a decision, but we are now busy with DTI to discuss how we will do the transfer, because they have got certain commitments up to 18 months in advance. we need to make sure that when we take over that responsibility into the Department of Tourism, we also know what is the liabilities that lie and wait there for us. Because it's not very much similar to the Expanded Public Works Program, how they deal with the issues. And we need to be sure that when we take it, we are in a position to manage that process. And this is what we are doing at this stage. The intention is that at least some of the funding to be moved to our budget process 1st of April, and that we then have to phase out the approach around how we take it over from DCI into out, so that there's no problem of nothing happening in between. Thank you.
I think that should conclude this session. If we have any other questions, then we shall submit them also to the secretary, and then allow the process to continue. And then any issue then not clarified after 7 working days from now, that ought to be clarified by later. And then members can then ask a question. Given the situation that with the recession your funds were reduced, but now the tasks are expanded, how do we then manage that? Where do you find yourself in? What do you think should be done? We shall be engaging with our BRRR, how many R's? And the way we shall be making our recommendations. And from your side, we need to know that perhaps when not for us to tell you what should be done, but it is for us to criticize you whenever you make a mistake, and not praise you when you make a mistake. That's for the media. So, let us then get your concluding remark, and then we shall then do our concluding remark. Thank you. Mr. Udabo.
Thank you, Chairperson, and members of the committee. I take it that we are always willing and ready to come back to this committee at any time to account for the work that we do. SAT, we are very proud of the work that we do and the people that work for us. Certainly enjoy what they do, and they very much contribute to the goals of the cabinet and the country and our government. To use tourism as a catalyst towards economic growth and development, and also to help the small and medium enterprises in the creation of jobs. It's a task that we take seriously, and I hope that what we report back to you continues to give you the confidence that that's what we do. I must apologize once again and thank you for your understanding for the difficulties that we've had with the AG statement, some of the technicalities that were there. Because the AG told us that when I went to that meeting with them, that in fact they also continue to apply a higher standard than the previous year. So that even the smallest of mistakes will be pointed out. And I think that is indeed their duty, and they should continue to do so, and we welcome that, and people will be accountable for that. I must say that, Chairperson, in respect of that particular item on the statement, I think it would be correct from the government's point of view that the statement would take that the statement that's in the report is a statement, until such time that we provided you with a statement to the contrary from the AG's office, which we will seek to do to clarify matters even as soon as we leave this day. That letter should be given forwarded to yourself so that you can then report to the next level at this committee. But it is something that we should handle responsibly and make sure that, in fact, the statements that are being made are the correct ones. We certainly continue to look for creative ways of making sure that the budget, as it reduces or stays the same or doesn't increase as much as we'd like to, that we constantly challenge ourselves as to what else we can do or how differently we can do our business, because we do know that that part is limited. The process of reprioritization is one that we do every year. We meet at the forecast of the board and the officials to look at what the challenges are, what the needs are out there, and how can we best reprioritize so that we can meet the competing needs. It's not always possible. If you take, for instance, a simple dilemma that we have, for instance, that our core markets such as the UK and Germany and others, which continue to provide us with our bread and butter, are not growing as fast as we would like them to, because they saturate at this point. But you can't afford not to be in those markets. You must continue to market yourself, you must continue to be, make sure that you're top of the mind, because we have competitors out there. The minute we leave the scene, somebody else takes that bread and butter from us. So we must continue to invest in those markets, even if they are saturated, because they're present. But at the same time, we have this challenge, on the other hand, of going towards emerging markets, the new markets, such as Angola, Brazil, India, and so on, because we want to establish a presence on them. So you are caught in this almost catch-22 situation that you still continue to spend money in the UK and Germany, and yet you must go and find the ways of marketing yourself in Brazil and India and China and these other new places. Because similarly, you want to get a market share of the Chinese market and the Indian market and so on. So it's a bit of a difficult balancing act. A lot of it we're going to have to do through using the media that we use by a couple of people like CNN and National Geographic and others. the lessons that are coming out of things like Brazil, which is, has increased their domestic tourism to the greatest extent, that it shows in their income, it shows in their infrastructure, it shows in many, many other areas, it shows in the number of jobs they have created. They have to take those lessons and apply them to South Africa and do even better. And that's what it is. So in those words, I'd like to thank you, Dalton, and your support, any criticism. We'll take them happily and we'll continue to start to do that.
Now, thank you very much for being done. And I think you realize now you have a huge responsibility. A huge responsibility, especially after the president, in the state of need of the nation address, put tourism as one of the primary job drivers in the economy. I think that was a very, very, very huge responsibility. But you have identified, we have together identified the problems that are there in the department, and we admire the way you have taken responsibility. But in as much as it is easy to say to someone else, but the problems here and there, at the end of the day, if you do not accept the responsibility, it means that you are not going to improve, you are not going to correct, and then it is going to lead us nowhere. And as members of parliament, we have been looking at the Office of the Auditor General as well, and been wondering at the office continuing raising the bar without developing human capital to meet those demands. Because if you want excellence, which is good, at the same time then you go to train people to be able to meet those standards. And someone has got to make them have the correct attitude in conducting their business in such a way that they meet the raising of the bar. It is a challenge, but we do not know how then you audit this thing. Because if say you say the department is right by 10%, and then you find that the transgressions they have made all are from the old regulation and not from the new regulation. So now, do you say that is a regression or that is the progress? Things happen spontaneously. So I think we're going to try and avoid those things. If there is something new that is introduced, then we've got to perhaps we don't have to be measured for about 3 or 5 years to adjust and employ the people. Because in most instances, it means that it would employ people that can do things differently. But otherwise, you are doing well. And then the last is, we shall look at the report as you go on, and we are confident that you are. You will be in a position to be on top of the job, and we may call you in about 6 months' time and ask you where are you and how far are you and have those problems been corrected. You have said that you are still having the CFO working even now. So, well, if the CFO is there, then perhaps if you have the CFO engaging as well, because that is the first person that should be regulating this thing. That should be interacting with internal audit that you employ before even it goes to the audit committee. So we expect then problems not to run throughout the year. Let us catch them in 2 months' time, in 3 months' time. It is going to be better. We are going to perform even better. Let us inspire our team. Team South Africa, wherever we are, let us not demotivate ourselves. It should be everyone's challenge to inspire the other as we move in this difficult situation we are in as South Africans and as global citizens. So let us move out of the ordinary and hunt the experience. guitarist out there.
If I have to say.
Okay.
Thank you.